Welcome back to Latin America Review. I continue to be in Brazil. I'm in Florianópolis in the state of Santa Catarina, where I came to cover a rally by Lula da Silva that was held here during his Southern Region tour. Today we have Eleni Piva. She's a journalist. She's also the regional coordinator for Latin America at Progressive International. Progressive International will be having a delegation here during these elections. And she's the co-founder of a weekly show on geopolitics, co-hosted by former Brazilian Minister of Foreign Affairs, Celso Amorim, and many other things. We'll bring her on right now, and we're going to be talking about Brazil's elections. Thank you so much for being with us this week, Eleni.
Thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we have so much to talk about. Tell us right now, right off the bat, how things are looking in terms of the polls and, you know, where things are going as far as we can see from the figures.
So what we saw from the beginning of the campaign to now is that Bolsonaro is kind of stable in 35% of the voting intentions. And Lula had it's oscillating a bit more. From the latest poll to this one, we saw that he gained 3 points. So he's now at 44% and a little bit more, a little bit less, depending on the polling that we are looking at. But one thing that I think is important for us to see here is that at the same time that Lula is gaining points, Bolsonaro is kind of stabilized at one at that level, 30-something percent. So this tells us that even though the campaign has been really aggressive, the campaign has been trying to gain more votes and, broadening the kind of demography, the votes for Bolsonaro, using Michelle, his wife, to gain the women's vote and so on, he is stagnated. At the same time, Lula has been able to broaden kind of the number of voters that were willing to vote for him at the beginning of the campaign. That is really interesting because this is something that we were not expecting, and we will likely see this broaden even more for the second round if we come to that, and it's most likely that we will.
And we're constantly looking at those new polling figures. But tell us, or correct me if I'm wrong, but what we're looking for in order to see Lula win in one round is for him to receive 50% of valid votes plus one extra vote, not 51%, but 50 plus one vote that would win him. Is that correct?
Exactly. That's what we need. We were very close to that at the beginning of the campaign, but then Lula oscillated down because Bolsonaro started his campaign. You know, this was prior to the campaign. And now what we are seeing is a likely scenario for a second round. But Lula is definitely the favorable candidate, the candidate that most likely it's going to win. Bolsonaro has lost a lot of points, but he still has a very strong base, a core electorate that did not change sides. And what is dividing a little bit the votes for Lula is actually the votes that are going to Ciro Gomes and Simone Tebet, that together they are about, 12% of the total votes so far.
Tell us, Eleni, I forgot to ask, where are you from in Brazil and where are you now?
I'm from São Paulo. I'm back in Brazil right now. So I'm based in São Paulo and accompanying the elections here, the campaign and so on at the capital city of the state of São Paulo.
Fabulous. Okay, well, you know, I've been going around to some of the different Lula rallies here in the southern region, but we also did some coverage. I did some coverage with our mutual friend, journalist Brian Meir in Recife, in the state of Pernambuco, that's in the northeast of Brazil. And, you know, the strategy of the PT and of Lula's campaign right now seems to be to speak to the average working class person on very common issues that affect the widest section of the population. And there's a lot of people who support him from all, you know, a huge range of different backgrounds and ideologies. And it's really impressive. And I think, you know, one of the things has been, he's speaking a lot about poverty alleviation, about the record of his government, about housing, about hunger, about unemployment, these things that really affect people. Tell us, what are some of the main issues that you see in this campaign that, you know, that that the candidates are having to respond to?
I think one is the impacts of the pandemic. We know that Brazilians are now going through a very gruesome period. We have unemployment rates that are over, you know, it's the highest historical rates in unemployment so far, over 13 million people. And here in Brazil are unemployed. We have seen a spike in the rates of people who goes, you know, who goes hungry every day, who is below poverty line, below the poverty line. We are also seeing that the state is going into, again, into a very complicated level of debtness of the state, of the, you know, the government. And these are things that are impact our daily life. We are seeing like our power to buy things, how inflation is corroding our daily lives here. So I think those are very important issues. And one thing that is really important, and Lula is exploring that a lot, is how the PT governments, they actually, the legacy of those governments were exactly the opposite of the legacy that Bolsonaro is leaving us, the state of the country that Bolsonaro is leaving for Brazilians. On the other hand, Bolsonaro is exploiting something that is very currenty. You know, he has said this a lot, which is the corruption, that Lula was arrested, you know, kind of spinning the narrative of Lava Jato, something that Bolsonarismo does a lot, completely for, you know, completely overriding all the corruption that he himself and his wife, his sons have done and provably done, not like the so-called corruption from the PT years, that most of it were just part of the lawfare that led to Bolsonaro's government. One thing that is interesting is that at the same time that Lula is gaining a lot of support, kind of, you know, rolling on this perspective, like, see, we have already proven ourselves with the results of our previous governments. We see that Bolsonaro has reached like a ceiling of votes. As I said before, he has his core voters. Those are unchanged. Those are still there. But he is not, you know, he's not growing in the polls. But still, 35% of votes, seeing as how he has basically destroyed the little that we had advanced in the PT years, is something that is, you know, really worrying for me.
In every election in Latin America, there are comparisons made with Venezuela as a form of fear-mongering. And, you know, it's anti-communist fear-mongering. It's really funny because right now, Bolsonaro and Bolsonaro supporters are actually accusing the media of being pro-Lula, which is bizarre because the media had such a large role in, you know, the coup against Dilma and, you know, the lawfare case against Lula as well that prohibited him from running in the 2018 election. Talk to us a little bit about the media campaign during this election.
There is a shift as in comparison to what we saw in other presidential campaigns. I'm not saying that mainstream media is campaigning for Lula, but we can see that the attacks has changed the tone a bit. Bolsonaro is really, this is something that we see almost everywhere, right? Using Venezuela to compare. We know that Lula always try to distancing himself from that kind of, you know, polemic, because he has worked a lot with Chavez. He has worked with Venezuela, Brazil under both Dilma and Lula presidencies. We saw that we had a very positive, a very productive relationship with Venezuela. But as you said, it's not, it was never there, they never proposed something similar to, you know, a more revolutionary kind of politics, because that's not neither Lula or Dilma's style, and it's not something that Brazilians would, you know, largely support. We want, you know, not me particularly, but, you know, Brazilians in general support a kind of more social democratic state, a welfare state. But I don't think we are quite there on a revolutionary state. And Lula knows how to play that. But Bolsonaro has been saying things like, you know, Lula will turn Brazil into Venezuela, and this, those kind of easy slogans that people don't think much about it and just roll with it. On previous campaign, what we saw in the media is that we had a lot of headlines, you know, always kind of fostering and gaining on this kind of fear of, you know, a revolution or a revolutionary breach taking place here in Brazil. And right now we see that they continue attacking Lula, but they are also attacking Bolsonaro. One thing that I, you know, one moment in this campaign that I think is very illustrative of this is when Lula and Bolsonaro went for the interview, you know, the campaign interview at Jornal Nacional. Jornal Nacional, which is the leading news, you know, broadcast news outlet here in Brazil, you know, it's from Globo, which is historically has undermined Lula's campaign. And we saw that the treatment gave to Bolsonaro was much more hostile than the one that was given to Lula. This is very illustrative. I mean, that, you know, underlying message there is like, we don't like Lula, we will attack Lula, but, you know, our main enemy right now is Bolsonaro. That's a very significant change from, you know, previous campaigns.
And I should say that you lived in Venezuela previously, and I think you've actually collaborated a bit with Telesur. You're someone who probably pays a little bit closer attention to the PT's proximity with Venezuela. I mean, I have to ask, because there's a lot of people on the exterior who would say that, you know, the PT is more of a center-left government, now talking about the party, not talking about, you know, the two former presidents. What would you say about that? Because, of course, we know that, and you can go into this as well, that the Workers' Party has a base that is made up of the social movements. I'm not sure how formalized that relationship is, but we know that the most important and largest social movements of the country have always supported the Workers' Party. What are your thoughts on that?
I think there's what the party as, you know, as an institution believes and works on, and there's what the party in government can do. I think the PT has always supported the Bolivarian Revolution. They have been side by side on a lot of initiatives, international initiatives, with the PASUVI, with the people of Venezuela, with the government. But there is a distinction of what the party could do when in power. The solidarity that the Workers' Party has with the Bolivarian Revolution is really entrenched in the party, in the bases. They are, you know, they are in the most, you know, the majority of movements of organizations here that support the revolution. But in power, there are certain constraints. And I think they decided to play a more, let's say, behind the curtains kind of support to the revolution than open support. And I mean, they made a lot of advancements in you know, partnerships, commercial partnerships, infrastructural partnerships, but kind of, you know, tuning down the, you know, the spoken support for the revolution. It's kind of politics that we have to see here in Brazil, but this does not undermine how the party works with the revolution and supports the revolution from the base up and all the way down.
Well, tell us a little bit just about some of the things that Lula has been saying, the candidate Lula, on the campaign trail and some of his speeches, about some of his proposals now going forward. He's talked about the creation of a ministry for women, a ministry for culture. And of course, he says once again that he wants to take on the issue of hunger as Brazil is back to the hunger map. But elaborate a bit on what are some of the things that people hope to see now that he's actually said he's going to do. And particularly, maybe you can touch on some of the things that he has said, because, you know, it's very difficult when you're campaigning. You can't say everything you're going to do, and you can't be too leftist or you know, you can't, you know, announce a whole lot of things. You have to stick to the same script, but particularly with regards to foreign policy, internationally, Brazil and the world, multilateral organizations and things like that. What are some of the things you're going to see?
I think one of the main lessons that I think the PT, but Lula himself, you know, the candidate Lula, the person, the individual, has learned from all that happened with Lawfare, with Lava Jato, with Mensalão, is that we have to make changes in the structure of the state here in Brazil that cannot be so easily undone. So the changes that he is proposing now are changes that are going to be very hard to roll back to any kind of, you know, government that may succeed the PT or Lula. So we do not see, you know, to prevent us from seeing something that we saw with Temer and Bolsonaro, which is just a complete rollback of policies that were so important for us and advanced so much our, you know, daily lives here in Brazil. As for foreign policy, what I think he's proposing is, again, I would say the kind of politics that he and Celso Amorim and others proposed for Brazil, like a sovereign policy, a global south policy, and put Brazil back in kind of the leadership of this new arrangement, right? Like a south-south arrangement where sovereignty, independence of our countries are, you know, kind of the main flagship there. It's proposing, as we did a lot with Chavez, like proposed forums and international organizations that were independent from, you know, the main allies from the North, but is still having a very pragmatic relationship with the United States, with the European Union, but also with China, with Russia, BRICS as a whole. I think this is going to be something that we are going to see happen in, you know, first days of the presidency, because Brazil has lost a lot of terrain in the international arena. And this was something that Lula held with high regard. He thought it was very important for Brazil to have this leading role, to advance this South-South agenda, to advance, to create independent forums for a relationship with, you know, countries in Latin America and in Africa, in Asia, so on and so on.
Do you think that the leadership or the main actors of Lula's former governments, and maybe Dilma's as well, just to, you know, lump them in together, have any major regrets over some of their policies and some of the things they did during their mandates that they're going to have to change, or that, you know, were rejected by the people who support them?
I think there's definitely, you know, kind of looking back and trying not to make the same mistakes, especially I think in economy and how to deal with the Congress. One thing that has been analyzed over and over, that the very own policy that allowed Lula to govern for his first mandate is something that you know, is related to some extent to the coup against Dilma. I mean, what started as a political negotiation with Congress, with parties that are from, you know, right wing, turned into kind of a hostage situation under Dilma. So I think Lula and the party, they realized that this was something that could not be sustained over time. And although Lula is now running on a ticket with Geraldo Alckmin, who was for, you know, a long time one of the main political adversaries from the PT, this kind of signs that they are going to continue doing, you know, abroad politics, trying to bring all those actors to their, you know, to the PT arena, but that they are not going to be willing to negotiate in this kind of hostage situation as we saw with Dilma. Now, Lula has been very clear on that he wants to run, you know, with the broader, with, you know, as many parties as possible, kind of stitching together this proposal for the country, but that the PT is going to be completely independent and, you know, put forward the policies that they promised to the Brazilian people. I think this is an important lesson. We will have to wait and see how this is going to unfold over the years with, you know, with having Alckmin as a VP. But I think this is an important, it is an important movement forward, let's say that.
How would you compare? I don't know how much you know about the model of Luis Arce in Bolivia, but would you say that what he's proposing in terms of those economic policies and what he plans to do with Petrobras and the other state industries is similar to what we see in other countries?
I think I'm not really sure, you know, I can compare it to what Arce is doing, but I think this is something that is very important for Lula, is to regain like full power of the state industry that we had here. The thing is that it's very complicated to roll back what Bolsonaro did without doing something as Chavez did with the oil industry in Venezuela, right? Because you have to You have to breach contracts. You have to go full on in a full on re-estatization of those industries. And I think this is something that maybe the T and Lula are not willing to do right now. What I think he's going to do is to do the same thing that he did in his governments, is that to stop privatization, but rolling back, kind of, you know, re-estatizing those industries are going to be very complicated. It's going to be very complicated. I haven't seen any, like, you know, proposal on that sense, but this is something that we saw before, and I'm guessing this is something that we are going to see again.
So just to interrupt things up, you know, we're speaking in the scenario that Lula and the Workers' Party do retake power. So what do you think is going to happen in the next 12 days, is it, or 13 days, or until we get the result? What do you think is going to happen? Do you think that there's, how big is the possibility of actually winning in the first round versus having to go on to a runoff election? And, you know, what, just maybe very briefly, you can summarize some of the different scenarios that people have spoken about in terms of what Bolsonaro might try to do to try to, you know, undermine the result and the electoral process. Give us your take on that.
It's important. This is a very important point, because we are doing analysis assuming that Lula is going to win.
Take power in January, yeah.
Yeah, because what we see in the polls let us, you know, it's very feasible that he's going to actually win. At the beginning of the campaign, as I said, I think there was a possibility of Lula winning in the first round. I think now we are going actually to go to a second round. It's very complicated to do like this kind of predictions in politics, because today we have these facts and tomorrow everything might change. But if everything stays as we see today, we are going to go to the second round and Lula is going to win in the second round. We have seen Bolsonaro do a lot of threats on not accepting the results, kind of delegitimating the electoral process, kind of putting into question how the electoral system works here with the, you know, with the electronic voting system and so on. We have also seen the military is trying to, you know, we are going to have someone overseeing elections, so on and so on. But I don't think, realistically speaking, that Bolsonaro is going to stage a coup. You know, to stage a coup is something that is, that entails the support of actors not only within the country, you know, like a broad range of actors within the country, but also internationally. And we are not seeing that kind of, you know, that kind of support right now. Of course, it might be discussions going on behind curtains. We never know. We never, those things are things that we do not know beforehand. But as of now, I think that he's going to accept the results of the election, might give, you know, some time, some kind of, you know, speech trying to undermine it. But then what he's going to proceed to do is something similar to what we saw Trump doing, kind of still, you know, rallying his base and trying to provoke, you know, to provoke some kind of destabilization from within, but with little power. What is going to be, in my opinion, what's going to be much, much more complicated for Lula to navigate is the expectations. There's a lot of expectations being put on this government, being put on him returning to power. And we know for a fact that we are not living in the same context, in the same scenario, both here in Brazil and internationally, as we were in his first government. So this is going to be very complicated because people are expecting that, you know, he kind of swoop in and on his first day, we will, you know, wake up in a new country, and this is going to be an impact for everyone because things are going to take time.
And I don't want to leave out, you know, asking you about Ciro Gomes's role and his candidacy in this race, because, you know, what we saw in three different countries recently, in Peru, in Colombia, and Ecuador, was that these sort of outside candidates or third in the running candidates actually just appeared out of nowhere and took a really large percentage of the vote share when it came time to vote. I mean, Pedro Castillo was a surprise for a lot of people. In the case of Colombia, Gustavo Petro ran against someone who no one thought he would be running against. And in Ecuador, Yaku Perez really shook things up. So it's really important to talk about the fact that Ciro Gomes has actually been in those upper single digits in the polling, at least for the last little while. What do you think about his candidacy? Why is he there? What does he represent?
That is... I think Ciro has had this like long-standing dream of become president of the country. He has, he has as a governor and in his political career, he has done some things, especially in the Northeast, in Ceará, where he, you know, where he built his political career. But I don't think he has never achieved the national proeminence necessary to win a presidential election. And he actually plays a very disruptive role because his platform, his campaign is not based on proposals. It's based on attacking Lula and kind of, rallying these votes that were once upon a time, a PT vote or is a progressive vote, but there has some kind of resistance to the PT or to Lula itself. So his campaign is something that really, and in this year, more than any other year, we can see that his videos, what he's saying, the kind of, campaign that he is doing is being used a lot in, Bolsonaro circles to kind of attack Lula and to gain votes for Bolsonaro. So it's a very disruptive role. I personally think that Ciro has a very weird understanding of the general context of politics. We are not talking about electing Lula just because we want to elect Lula. We are talking about electing Lula because we need to put an end to Bolsonarismo. We need to defeat once and for all fascism here in Brazil. And this big picture is something that escapes Ciro, and it's very damaging for Brazilian democracy.
Well, thank you so much, Eleni. I know you are very busy, to the point where we didn't think we were going to be able to speak with you, and you're really, really glad they were able to speak to you. Tell us what you'll be doing from now until the election. I believe you'll have some of our comrades from the Progressive International here in Sao Paulo, well, where you are in Sao Paulo.
Exactly. We are going to bring a delegation here to observe the elections, to kind of having this perspective of how legitimate is our process, to see firsthand how Bolsonarismo is eroding Brazilian democracy. And we are also doing a series of videos. We are launching an article series to kind of bring to speed the international audience on how damaging Bolsonaro is and Bolsonarismo, and how important it is for the international audience to be, you know, to be alert, because defeating Bolsonaro at the elections is not going to be enough to defeat Bolsonarismo. To defeat Bolsonarismo, it's going to be a long-term struggle, and we have to be alert, we have to be prepared, and we have to be solidary with the Brazilian people to overcome this.
Thank you so much, Eleni, for being with us on Latin America Review on Causacho News. And hopefully we'll see you very soon in Sao Paulo.
Thank you so much, Camila. It was a pleasure to be here.